KGRG FM, KGRG FM, HD1 Auburn, also broadcasting on K207 AP, Seven Lake Taps, 89.3 FM. You're listening to The Buzz. It's December 1st, but you could have fooled me.
I know. It feels kind of warm.
Well, no, like, it seemed like December started, like, weeks ago for me.
For me, it feels like that, too. Like, right now, I feel like it's almost Christmas.
It's not even the weather thing. It's the whole, like,
atmosphere.
People were putting out Christmas decorations.
Yeah.
The stores were putting out Christmas displays. Gosh.
I couldn't stop singing Christmas carols yesterday.
I'm going to kill you.
I know.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, like, the fact that people have started the whole Christmas thing so early, it's getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest Christmas fan as it is. I think the idea of the holiday is cool and, like, getting people together and all that fun stuff. That's why I like Thanksgiving, too. You get people together, but the fact that you make such a big freaking deal out of it, man. I'm just in it for
just
the food.
Calm down.
Right?
You're in it for the food and the free stuff.
Man, people need to, like, get some Christmas cannabis or something.
Cannabis.
But, yeah, we got a really awesome show for you this morning. I'm super excited. We got some very special guests. We have Cognac and Comics this morning. They're going to be interviewing with us at 8:20, talking all about their projects. They're really, really interesting comics.
Always miss the good stuff.
Right?
I always miss the good stuff.
That's going to be on demand on KJRG.com in case you miss that or, like, you're at school or work, whatever. It's going to be a really awesome interview. I'm really excited to talk to these guys. I actually met them at Jesse the Comic Show.
Nice!
We have a very rousing edition of The Price is Wrong. We have another edition of Celebrity Fact or Fiction.
Yeah!
We got your trivia at 7:20. We got some tickets to give away for Ghoul. Whole bunch of exciting stuff happening this morning. Stay tuned to 89.9 KGRG FM. You're listening to The Buzz.
Yo!
Geeky news.
Geeky news.
Geeky news.
Geeky news.
89.9 KGRG FM. That's a little bit of sponge core to wake you up in the morning, right?
Yeah.
Is that where we get the chocolate sound effect from?
What?
That song, because we have a sound effect
it's
that
from
goes...
from SpongeBob.
That goes, CHOCOLATE! Is that where we get that sound effect from?
I don't know.
I don't know about this sound effect.
Anyways, it's time for your geeky news, and this morning, we'll start off with an iffy one. I'm not so sure about this. Live-action Pokemon movie lands a director.
I hate that.
No.
Yeah, does that sound wrong to anybody else?
It sounds so wrong.
Everything about everything that you just said.
Like, I'm not sure I need this in my life, but they're gonna do it anyways.
Oh, I'm sure that I don't need it.
But the ruined Pokemon live-action picture, Detective Pikachu, is finally moving forward and has found a director in Rob Letterman.
The man
who was most recently tasked with bringing the beloved children's book series Goosebumps to the screen.
No.
Letterman seems to be a logical choice at the helm of Legendary's attempt to bring the worldwide children's entertainment powerhouse to the world of live-action cinema. Legendary snapped up the rights to a Pokemon film series this July after the augmented reality app Pokemon Go reignited Pokemania, combining fun new mobile technology with 90s nostalgia. Though interest in the game has cooled, Pokemon Go part owner Nintendo saw a 25% increase in their stock, proving that the property is highly profitable. Though that shouldn't come as a surprise after being introduced in Japan in 1996, Pokemon has sold 279 million video games worldwide, shipped 21.5 billion cards to 74 countries, and spawned 19 seasons spanning an animated series that also led to multiple animated films. A live-action film series was only a matter of time. Nicole Perlman, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Alex Hishra, Gravity Falls, wrote the script for Detective Pikachu, and Japanese studio Toho will be distributing the film in Japan while Universal Studios handling release duties elsewhere.
No.
I don't need this.
The Goosebumps movie coming from a girl who is a hardcore Goosebumps fan, the Goosebumps TV shows and the Goosebumps movies were awful. Awful.
I just don't need... Especially, like, Detective Pikachu. Who needs a Detective Pikachu movie?
Nobody. Pika's just supposed to be there to go, Pikachu, and zap people. That's your job. And be cute.
I mean, he's going to have a little detective head. That's going to be adorable, but that's about
that
it.
That is going to be adorable.
I hope he has a magnifying glass and a little trench coat.
Me too.
But I don't want it live action. I mean, if it was animated, you got to admit, that would be pretty cute if it was animated.
Dude, I'd pick up a Detective Pikachu hat with, like, little ears and stuff out of it.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah, and a little magnifying glass.
But I don't need... Like, is he going to solve a homicide? Is that going to be too dark for a children's movie?
The homicide of another Pokemon?
They're just like a person. I don't know. People die.
I know. It just makes me sad.
More weird movie news. Rampage, the video game, is getting its own movie. It might be more emotional than you think. Anybody play this video game? Is it just me?
What game is it again?
Rampage?
Nope.
It was also an arcade game. I played it on PlayStation, but you could choose between, like, a giant gorilla or a lizard or a wolf or, like, a monkey. And it's a side-scroller, and what you do is you run around and, like, you punch buildings down and you grab people out of their windows and you eat them. And
so it's just, like, everything you want to be in, like, real life, but
it's, yeah. It's great. And, like, little helicopters fly around and try to shoot you down. It's a lot of fun.
That does sound like fun.
But amongst the 20 or so projects that Dwayne Johnson is currently juggling is an adaptation of the video game Rampage. He's collaborating again with director Brad Peyton on the movie, following their work together on Journey 2, Mysterious Island, and San Andreas. And in the new interview, Peyton has been shedding some light on the new movie and the approach they're taking. It's going to be a lot more emotional, a lot scarier, and a lot more real than you'd expect, he said. So you look at the original concept about the law that affects these animals and makes them rampage, and that's the nugget. He added that if they called me tomorrow to do Call of Duty, I wouldn't want to play any of the Call of Duty games. I just have to come up with something that deserves to be its own thing. That's where a lot of these got it. You're asked to adapt something to the screen, and you're ignoring what you're adapting. Check. That's a bit unfair, of course, but that's an awful lot of built-in narrative to Rampage in the game where you as monsters tore down buildings, and Peyton also clarified that the movie will be a monster film with horror elements. It's due to be released in cinemas April 2018, so it was a couple of years away, but I'm not sure I needed this movie either.
Yeah.
Like, you already have Godzilla, you have Pacific Rim 2 coming out, and I'm not sure you need this to be a horror movie. I could see this being in the same vein as a Godzilla movie, where Godzilla was initially a Japanese propaganda film to show the dangers of, like, nuclear waste and nuclear energy and stuff like that. So this is all about, like, testing on animals and watching the animals go insane and stuff like that.
I feel bad for the animals.
I'm not sure I need this movie either.
I don't think you do. I feel like we're just wanting to adapt everything at this point because we don't have any original ideas. And when we do have original ideas, no one likes them.
Something I do need in my life, though. Last geeky news story for this morning. Billy Dee Williams is going to provide the voice of Two-Face in the Lego Batman movie.
Yes!
I need this.
I'm so excited for this movie, I'm not gonna lie.
The Pokemon movie can go F itself. The Rampage movie can just go crawl up its own butt. I need Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face because Lego Batman was my favorite part of the Lego movie. The Lego Batman movie director Chris McKay just announced that Billy Dee Williams will provide the voice of Two-Face in the Batman film. What makes this casting so awesome is the fact that Williams played Harvey Dent, who becomes Two-Face, in Tim Burton's 1989 Batman movie. We never got to see his transformation to Two-Face in Burton's Batman movies, so I couldn't be happier to hear that he will in some way be reprising his role after, what's that, well over 20 years. That's like, what, 26, 27 years? Maybe even 28. Williams joins an incredibly fun cast of actors in the film, which will include Will Arnett as Batman, Ralph Fiennes as Alfred Pennyworth, Michael Cera as Robin, which is exciting.
Oh, Michael Cera.
Right? You have Jenny Slate as Harley Quinn. You have Zach Galifianakis as the Joker. That one's interesting.
Ooh.
And Rosario Dawson as Catwoman.
Ooh, I'm excited.
This is a really awesome cast. I couldn't peg Zach Galifianakis as the Joker, but you know what? Whatever. I also didn't... I mean, Billy Dee Williams wasn't on my radar at all for Two-Face, so there's that. This is really exciting. This is really good news.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Couple of bummer news stories that can go F themselves, and then really exciting news stories.
No Pokemon! Hashtag stop Pokemon.
Stay tuned. We got your regular news coming up after Mess by Real Friends. 89.9 KGRG. You're listening to The Buzz.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
This hour's news is brought to you by the worst Christmas ever, 2 at Real Life Tacoma on December 23rd, where you wear your ugly Christmas sweater while you listen to local bands like Into the Flood, Empyrean, and more to cover your favorite new metal songs. For more information, you can visit realarttacoma.com.
Thumbtacks!
Right?
Thumbtacks!
But it's time for your 6:30 news. And these first couple of news stories are going to be a little weird.
Okay, I'm ready.
News is always weird.
So, first news story, an ex-girlfriend is arrested after allegedly egging a man's home in the village of Sunset Point.
Okay, good job. Was Point spelled with an E?
It was?
Yes, they did it right.
What?
Sorry.
Why is that spelled right?
Oh,
do I know
it's a ballet thing.
It's a ballet thing. Point is spelled with an E because it's French, and it just looks wrong to me whenever it isn't.
Okay. But a 60-year-old village of Sabal Chase woman remains free on a $1,000 bond after she was caught on video surveillance egging the home of her ex-boyfriend in the village of Sunset Point. Diane Frank was taken into custody Friday by Sumter County Sheriff's deputies on a charge of criminal mischief. She had gone to the home of her ex-boyfriend in Hartsville Trail and threw eggs at it, according to the arrest report. She then threw a walking path stone against a window, causing a chip in the glass. She then used the stone to slice through the screen door.
Ooh.
The entire incident was captured on the man's home surveillance system, arrest report indicated. She'd been taken into custody Friday morning at her home at Astor Way in Village Sabal Chase.
Sigh.
See, I envision egging my ex's house, because he happens to live very close to me. And he was very rude. But anyways, I wouldn't, like, slash my way open with a jagged rock and, like, wreak havoc on the inside.
Yeah, that's a bit too much.
That's taking it too far.
I didn't know people over 60 still dated.
What?
I don't know. That's kind of weird to me.
My grandma's got a boyfriend.
Like, I don't know. I guess my grandparents have always been together, like, both sets of them. So it's weird to me that old people date. Like, I couldn't imagine my grandpa going and, like, doing a swing. Well, I could imagine doing a swingers club.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. Sorry, Grandpa.
Anyways.
Next news story. This one's even weirder. Federal mom accused of pouring gas on her daughter, threatening to light her on fire for a bad grade.
Federal way?
Oh, my God.
Federal way, Washington. That's
it's
right.
It's only federal. Yeah, that's what happens in federal way.
A 44-year-old mother is accused of dousing her teen daughter in gasoline and threatening to light her on fire because of what the victim said was a bad test grade.
It's probably like a C.
According to charging documents obtained by Q13 News, the woman also reportedly struck the 14-year-old girl with a tire jack and whipped her with a phone charger cord before the teen ran away to seek help from neighbors. Lisa Kyles was charged November 16th with attempted first-degree assault and felony harassment, both domestic violence qualifiers.
Okay.
What was the grade? This is the important part.
Yeah, I don't know the greatest.
She pleaded not guilty Tuesday in King County Superior Court. Detective Richard Kim says federal police were called to an apartment complex November 10th on reports that a mother threatened to light her daughter on fire with gasoline before taking off in a van. Doesn't say what the grade was, but the girl was able to escape from the van and run for help. She was taken to St. Francis Hospital for treatment and later put into Child Protective Services.
Okay, so, like, this is, like, a self-fulfilling prophecy because, like, no wonder, like, this kid's going to be able to study while your mom's trying to light you on fire. Like,
I know, right?
How are you going to get on the honor roll while your mom's literally lighting you on fire?
Well, do you guys remember, what was that? It's probably, like, 3 or 4 years ago when there was that whole, like, tiger mom craze.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't remember this at all.
I remember.
Do you know what a tiger mom is?
Yeah.
No.
I have one.
So tiger mom is like, so started stereotypically with Asian women, where you're just like on your kids to be like doctors and lawyers and stuff. It's funny because
my coworker. I've never heard this term though. Where have I been? I don't know.
My coworker, at one of my jobs, he's Vietnamese and we joke all the time how like he got to be on a test and now he can't be a lawyer anymore. Or he can't be a doctor, he has to be a lawyer. But yeah, that's just getting on your kids about just getting good grades. And if you don't, you beat the snot out of them.
Okay, that was not my mom, but my mom, every 5 seconds when I was younger, was like, steady, math, you do the math. In Soviet Russia, math does you.
See, my mom was always ticked off at me about my grades, but that was because I was a knucklehead, not because, I was getting C's.
I'm very glad that my parents pushed me, though.
Like, you know, like, that online, like, thing where you could check your kid's grades, like... My mom would check that, like, every day, and she's like, there better be a change, and I was like, they don't put the grades in, like, every single day, you realize
exactly.
That, right? Like, they do that, like, at the end of the week, or, like, every couple of weeks.
Yeah, my school, there was a... You could break it down and go grade by grade by grade for every test, every quiz, and every assignment.
Yeah, I could do that with those, too.
Yeah, and my mom... And I was always, like, telling my mom, Mom, only in math world can you buy 60 cantaloupes and everyone doesn't think you're crazy. And she was like, this is why you should do your homework. And I'm like, it's stupid.
Last I think you're crazy about one cantaloupe. Gross.
A son's tweet about his mom sneaking corn on the cob into a movie theater goes viral.
That's great.
That's right. The secret's out about a San Antonio mom who sneaks her favorite snack into the movie theater, but it's not something most people, including her son, expected. Dale De La Rosario, I'm sorry for butchering her last name, tweeted photos of his mom with this message. Some people sneak candy to the movie theater. My mom sneaks in corn on the cob. That's Dale was so sitting funny. In the movie theater with his mom when she asked him the question. He tweeted, dude, I bust out laughing because she whispered in my ear, you want some corn? I was like, what the hell, mom? Where did that come from? And she showed me.
His I hope she had butter, too. Like, I really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, like, it was just sitting there with
like,
the
you
butter.
Know that, like, that spray, like, weird butter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope she just had some of that in her bag.
Or, like, she went up to, like, where you get the popcorn butter and just, like, slathered some on the liquid
yeah.
stuff.
Honestly, though, like, this woman is probably me, because I, like, corn on the cob is so good. I would do that.
His post had thousands of the likes and retweets. The comments complimenting his mom is one-of-a-kind lady. She's my gal, and quote, your mom is the real MVP.
Exactly.
She really is.
Right?
She's wonderful.
Oh, she brings like a baked potato next time.
Me too.
Stay tuned, because just as a reminder, it's on our Facebook page and on our Twitter for following us, at TheBuzzKGRG. We got your tickets to Ghoul. They're playing in El Corazon on December 2nd. That's tomorrow, buddy. So
yeah.
Get your hand on these tickets right now. That's going to be this morning at 7:20 for Ticket Trivia Thursday.
Yeah.
But we'll be back with Celebrity Fact or Fiction after Dwell by Southworth. You're listening to The Buzz on 89.9 KGRG.
Yes, it is that time again. The time where I bring to you facts, fictitious statements. This is a segment on The Buzz where it's your job to tell me if I'm lying or if I'm telling the truth, which is rare. Fact or fiction on The Buzz right now.
Hey!
Hello!
Hi.
What's up?
I'm looking at Mulan memes. They make me happy.
That's a thing?
Yes!
Yes, it is.
I will show you some gloriousness.
Fiction.
All right, everyone. Hey! Hi! How y'all doing? It's H. Quinn here, and today we have an edition of Celebrity Fact or Fiction, and someone asked me on my Instagram what the H stands for. It stands for something.
Does it sit down for things, too?
Exactly. All right. And we're going to find out some wild facts and fictions about one celebrity. All right?
Whoa!
Today's celebrity is...
You need a drum roll again?
Yeah, I always do. Misty Copeland!
Okay.
I was waiting for the rim shot. One of these days it's going to be John Cena, and you better load up that sound bit.
How's he gonna know, though?
I will tell him, ish. Okay. Misty Copeland! Anyone here know who that is?
Who dat?
Ballerina.
She is the first African-American female principal dancer at an American ballet company.
Do principals typically dance?
Yeah. No, not school principals. Principal is as high as you can get. It's the top of the top, the creme de la creme. They get all the leads. They're really good. And she's the first female African-American dancer to become a principal dancer.
Neat.
I know. It's
excellent.
Awesome. She dances in American Ballet Theater. All right. This is good. And I chose her today because I myself am a ballet dancer, and I'm going to my dress rehearsal for one of my first ballet performances tonight.
Fun.
I know. All right. Question number one. Misty Copeland took her first ballet class at the age of 13 at a boys and girls club.
I'm going to say fiction.
I'm going to say it's a YMCA fiction.
It is a fact.
I think it should be younger.
No, that's what also makes her so extraordinary, the fact that she only started dancing at age 13. So generally, like, most professional dancers start when they're
like
10.
Man, I started dancing when I was 3, man. I still can't dance.
Are you in that top ballet class, Corey?
Oh, yeah, just getting down with my bad self.
Good job. Good job. Number two, she attempted to become an emancipated minor. but the move failed and she had to return home to her mother, who wouldn't let her attend ballet lessons.
Man, that's a bummer.
Like, I'm going to say true because she started so late.
I'm going to say fiction just because, like, typically if somebody's that successful and, like, they're getting on the gravy train, parents are going to be a part of it. That are, like, they're pushing the kid harder than the kid
but
wants to do.
But she started late.
I mean, I start a lot of things late.
Some things he hasn't started yet at all.
Oh, gosh. Woo! All right, that is a fiction. Because she did attempt to become an emancipated minor after her mother fought. She was living with her ballet teachers at the time to receive intensive training that would last up to 12 hours a day.
That's a little creepy.
But her mother claimed that the ballet instructors were brainwashing her and sued the ballet teachers and made her come home. Therefore, Misty attempted to become an emancipated minor. However, it sparked news coverage and family feuds and awful things, so she gave up and moved home. But her mom did let her continue ballet lessons. That was the fiction part of it.
100 people surveyed. Number one answer on the board. How is your ballet teacher brainwashing your child?
Exactly. And our final little tidbit today. Misty Copeland suffered an almost career-ending injury after her performance of The Firebird, in which she had the lead of The Firebird, with American Ballet Theatre back when she was only a soloist, when her left tibia cracked in half after her final jump off the stage.
By God!
Fiction.
That was the wrong button, and I'm sorry.
It's okay. Am I fired or is Corey?
I'm fired.
You're firing yourself?
Yes!
Good job. What do you think?
Fiction.
I'm gonna say. I wanna say fact because career ending injury, but I almost think it's like an ACL or something. Plus, like, how does one dance like a firebird? Do you stop, drop, and roll while flapping your arms?
I'm gonna
or?
Say faction.
I'll show you the video.
Faction.
Faction.
I'm on fire!
No, it's actually faction. A really difficult roll that's really fast. It is actually a fiction. She did suffer a career-ending injury, but her tibia did not snap in half. She had 6 stress fractures and underwent an experimental treatment where those stress fractures were filled with concrete in order for her to continue dancing.
I don't even know where my tibia is.
Exactly.
I'll tell you later.
All right. Oh, that's H. Quinn. That's H. Quinn with your Celebrity Factor fiction. Bye, everybody.
We'll be back with The Price is Wrong after Motorcycle by the Front Bottoms.
Yeesh.
Remember, we still got those tickets for Ghoul playing at El Corazon.
So
be
call
listening
us.
For your cue to call at 7:15. You're listening to The Buzz on 89.9 KGRG.
Thank you. Now, the time has come for us to embark on a quest into the great unknown. We shall scavenge the internet depths and discover its obscure trinkets and knickknacks and attempt to guess their worth.
Yeah!
Prepare your ears for...
The price is wrong, bitch.
Okay!
Contestants, come on down.
89.9 KGRG FM, it's time for everybody's favorite game show, The Price is Wrong. I got a range of very interesting items that my lovely contestants have to guess on.
Cool.
Are we ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Alrighty. So, your first item in The Price is Wrong is going to be the Fly Swatter Sword.
Ooh.
It's a sword that's a fly swatter.
Excuse me, sword.
Sword.
There's a W in there, madam.
Why sword. Is there a sword?
Sword.
Well, you can get revenge on those sword. Annoying flies in your house with this sword fly swatter.
Sword.
Shaped like a sword. You'll have full control over this fly-killing weaponry.
Sword.
Nice.
So, like, it's got the little handle, like a... It's more of a rapier than it is, like, a like one of those one-handed swords or, like, a medieval sword. I don't know. It looks like something you use for fencing. But
okay.
Just with a fly swatter at the end of it.
Got you.
And it comes in blue. I don't know if that's relevant or not, but it
Christmas
comes in blue.
Christmas is coming. Catch your swords.
Oh, man. There's a bad joke there off the air. Anyways,
yep.
So, Quinn, how much do you think the fly swatter sword is going to cost you?
I'm gonna say 25.
Okie dokie.
I'm going to say 15.
Well, you're both over.
Okay, I'm going to say $5.
Okie dokie.
I'm going to say 7.
Well, for a certain sum, you can get your own Flyus Watsa sword that you can use to dispatch of those dastardly flies for $13.
Oh.
It's the blue that bumps it from like 7 to 13.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It'll cost you extra, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Next item in The Price is Wrong, the TMNT Christmas sweater. Because there's no better way to spend the holidays
5,
than
000.
With your favorite Ninja Turtle game. Grab a slice of pizza at an ugly Christmas sweater party and wait for April O'Neil to interview you. From small to XXL, just about anyone will be able to enjoy this officially licensed TMNT sweatshirt. So it's got their little faces on it, and it's got some snowflake designs, and they're all smiling, wearing Santa hats.
What is the quality of the fiber, the textile?
It's made from some sort of cloth, possibly human skin.
Cool.
I like it.
Yeah. I'm gonna say $30. $30?
Okay. H. Quinn?
I'm gonna say $35.
Well, you're both over again. You're okay. Terrible at this.
Okay. $25.
$20.
Keep going.
Oh, 15. Really?
15, okay.
16.
First and sum. You can get your very own TMNT sweater with all their happy smiling faces and their little adorable Santa hats. You can wear it to your favorite ugly Christmas sweater party for $20.
Wait, you said we were both over.
Yeah, she said 20.
Oh, well, I suck at this game.
You really I won! Do. Ayo!
I'm sorry.
You should be. You should be ashamed
this
of yourself.
This is my game, and I don't care. The actual retail price is like $19.95, so you can go, I don't know, hop on a bicycle.
Yeah.
All right, for your showcase,
we have bicycles.
We got three items. You gotta give me the total price of all three. These are weirdly enough, like, office supply related?
Ooh.
I don't know. So your first item in the showcase is a rainbow pencil. That's right. You can let your imagination run wild with this pack of three rainbow pencils.
Imagination.
I love it. I want this.
All your friends with their unique rainbow pattern, especially fun when you sharpen them, since you'll get a fistful of tiny rainbows. Great for the creative type.
Pocket rainbows.
Family who likes drawing.
Pocket rainbows.
So, like, pocket rainbows.
As you sharpen it, it creates more of a rainbow, I guess. The wood is rainbow colored. I don't know how else to put this.
Roji Biv. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
Yeah, sure. But you compare those with your grass blade pens. Looking to brighten up your desk or space? Need quality writing instrument that brings flora of your outdoor world to your hands? Well, these grass blade pens are perhaps the solution to your dreary office space. Made
honestly,
of silicone.
I want those.
These lifelike pens look like blades of grass and together can make a wonderful potted pen garden. Holy crap, I can't speak this morning. Ah!
I want these. Like, I really do, actually.
Yeah, it looks like individual blades of grass and you just sort of put them in a cup and it looks like a little potted plant. And then the last item in the showcase is a word I can't say, so I'm going to call it the cat magnet.
Ooh.
Oh.
Every office space needs a cat magnet. Yours might even have one. This little kitty is perfect for holding all of your paper clips and staples, holy cow, neatly in its fur. Perfect for the cat lover in the office, since it works as a paperweight as well. So, for a certain sum, how much do you think you can get your three pack of rainbow pencils, your grass blade pens, and your cat magnet? That, like, attracts all your little paper clips and whatnot. We'll go H. Quinn first, since she lost.
Okay. I won.
I don't care.
I won.
Shut up.
Never! So it was the pencils and the...
and the pens and the cat magnet.
Okay. I'm gonna go 30.
$30, okay.
I'm gonna go 25.
Look at you, because for a certain sum... you can get your very own cat magnet to attract all of the hot paper clips. You can get your very own grass blade pens that look like a real blade of grass that you don't have to mow. And your rainbow pencils, you get a fistful of rainbows for $25.
Hey!
Good job.
I would like to thank whoever's going to get me those grass blade pens for Christmas.
They look real neat.
So thank you in advance. And yeah.
As the price is wrong, we'll be back with trivia. Don't forget, you can call in and play trivia, 253-833-5004. Call in, and just for calling in, we'll give you a sweet pair of ghoul tickets.
Seriously, we're desperate.
They wear, like, bags on their heads, and they're super sweet, and they have names like Fermentor, and I'm pretty sure one of them's name is Eric.
Nice.
Maybe, I don't know. Their drummer's name is Jeff, possibly.
Maybe.
Like, there's Decimator.
Yeah.
But if you win, you know what? I'll toss in a sweet KGRG messenger bag.
Ooh,
what?
Nice.
Yeah, man.
Hang on, I'm gonna go get my phone. Be right back.
You
so call in 253-833-5004 at 720. We'll be playing trivia for a pair of ghoul tickets and a KGRG brand new messenger bag. We'll be back after Throne by Bring Me the Horizon. One of these three contestants listens to Christmas music for fun. TJ, H. Quinn, or Danica?
And now it's time to play everyone's new favorite game show, Buzz It, with your host, Dave.
Dave's not here.
Dave actually isn't here, but good morning, caller. How are you doing?
You really need to make
it. Doing good, how are you?
Doing great, dude. So you know how to play?
Yeah, you just use the name to buzz in, right?
That's it. We got to take your first answer. If you manage to win, we'll toss in a free KGRG messenger bag. Sweet stuff. You already have the tickets to Ghoul, so have fun in that show. It's going to be pretty sick. These guys look pretty intense.
So, awesome.
Have
Yay!
Fun, dude. All right, so we'll go ahead and get into it with question number one. Question number one, what does NI stand for on the periodic table?
Quinn. Nitrogen.
It is not nitrogen.
What? Resisting urge to Google. Resisting urge to Google.
TJ, any answers?
I'm drawing a blank.
I'm drawing a blank, too.
All right, your multiple choice for what does NI stand for on the periodic table? Is it neptunium, nobelium, nidium? I don't even know how to say that word. I'm sorry. Or nickel?
Danica. Nobelium?
It's not nobelium.
TJ? Nickel?
It is nickel.
I was just about to do that.
That was going
to
be my other guess, yeah.
So TJ's got one. Question number two. Because I'm real good at this game.
Great. Doing great.
Amick was the mascot of the Montreal 76 Olympics. What animal is Amick?
Quinn. A donkey?
He is not a donkey.
I don't know. A cute, fluffy potato.
No.
TJ?
TJ.
A lion?
He is not a lion.
Danica. A mouse, because Mickey Mouse.
Quinn. A potato.
You're fired.
I know.
Your multiple Please choice leave. For what animal was Amick, the Montreal 76 Olympics mascot? Was he an otter, a bear, a beaver, or a dog?
Quinn. Otter.
He was not an otter.
Danica.
Danica.
Beaver.
He was a beaver. He was a beaver. Question number three. At the end of which century did America's European colonization start? At the end of what century did America's European colonization start?
TJ?
TJ.
17th?
Is not the
Danica.
End of 17th. Danica.
16th?
Not the 16th.
Quinn.
19th. Not the 19th.
No.
TJ?
18th? Not the 18th.
Danica. 15th.
It was the 15th.
I was like, 14th.
You guys are dancing all around it. Got real close. Question number four. See if H. Quinn was paying attention to her own fact or fiction, because at what age did Mozart write his first opera?
Danica. Four.
It was not four.
Quinn.
TJ?
Quinn.
Five.
It was not five.
What?
Danica.
TJ?
Six.
Was not six.
Danica.
Quinn.
Danica.
Seven.
Not
Quinn.
Seven. Quinn.
Three.
Not three.
Danica.
Danica.
Oh,
eight.
Oh!
Not eight.
Quinn! 14!
It's not 14.
13! 12! 11!
TJ, you got a guess, buddy?
10.
It's not 10.
Quinn. Danica.
Danica?
13.
Not 13.
Quinn!
Quinn?
15!
No.
Okay, multiple choice.
You guys are real bad
God.
At this. Multiple choice for what age did Mozart write his first opera? Was it 18, 9, 23,
Danica.
12? Danica.
9.
Not 9.
Quinn.
Quinn.
12.
Was 12.
We were
Holy
trying.
Holy cow. All right. So quick recap. Danica's got 2. TJ's got 1. Quinn's got 1. Question number 5. At which fictional school was the musical Grease set?
Danica.
Danica.
Rydell.
Was Rydell. Question number 6. Barney Stinson is a character.
Danica.
Danica.
How I Met Your Mother.
It is that. Oh, man. Question number 7. Before adopting the euro, what was the main unit of currency in Ireland?
Quinn. The doubloon or whiskey? Was it whiskey? Whiskey?
Danica. All Danica? I could think of is like Robin Hood and like their money was called Farthy.
No. TJ, you got a guess, bud?
The pound?
Was not the pound.
Multiple choice.
Quinn?
Quinn?
Whiskey.
I'm offended as an Irish person.
Your multiple choice for before adopting the euro, what was the main unit of currency in Ireland? Was it the boot, the tap, the punt, or the kick?
Quinn.
Quinn.
The tap.
Danica.
Danica.
The boot.
TJ?
The kick?
Was not the
Quinn.
Kick.
Danica.
Quinn.
Punt.
It was the punt.
I'm gonna punt you out the door.
You know you love me. Everybody loves me. And I'll stop.
Question
that.
Number 9. By what name is part of the constellation Ursa Major sometimes known?
Quinn.
Quinn.
The Big Bear.
Not the Big Bear.
Oh, Big Dipper. The Big Dipper. Dipper.
I'll give it to you.
The dipper, the dipping of the pair of fish dippers.
When you dip, we dip, we dip.
Question number 10. A diabetic person has an excess of what substance?
Quinn.
When?
Sorry, I thought I said that a half second later.
What?
I start saying things.
Okay, can you start the question over?
A diabetic person has an excess.
TJ? Sugar?
It is sugar.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Well, you were sort of like just, I don't know, you were like rambling.
Here's the thing. When I start talking, I tend to think that I'm going to actually get the words out of my mouth later than they actually happen. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay.
Well, TJ, thanks for calling in, dude. You still got the tickets for Ghoul, so have fun at that show. Quinn got you all the information. You're all set to go. Have a good time, dude. Thanks for calling in.
Did I win?
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks. Have a good morning, dude.
Bye.
Yeah.
Did I win?
You lost.
Ow.
You know who the winner was?
Danica. I wasn't sure.
Yep. With a score of 4-2-2.
Oh.
Danica got it out.
All
or
right.
6-2-2.
I was like, how does that work?
It was 6-2-2.
Okay.
I can't count.
Wait a moment.
We'll be back with your news after Circles by Pierce Seville on 89.9 KGRG. You're listening to The Buzz.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Breaking news.
This hour's news is brought to you by the worst Christmas ever, too, at Real Life Tacoma on December 23rd. Wear your ugly Christmas sweater while you listen to local bands like Into the Flood, Empyrean, and more to cover your favorite new metal songs. For more information, you can visit reallifetacoma.com.
Hey, phrasing!
Hey, yo!
Excellent.
Yes. Hi, yes. Everybody, it's H. Quinn, and I'm here with your 7:30 news. All right, so starting off, kind of sad, but it'll get kind of cool and then kind of happy, all right? So, this morning at 3:30 a.m., a veteran police officer was shot and killed several times while responding to a domestic disturbance in Tacoma. At the news conference that was held later, a Pierce County... I can't ever do this right.
Pierce County?
Pierce County!
Are you okay?
Deputy... Ed Troyer said the suspect used 2 children as human shields to guard himself from the cops. His own kids. ages 8 and 11, but they were taken from the scene unharmed. The police responded to a domestic disturbance call after the wife was locked out of her house by the husband, and when they tried to help the wife, the husband barricaded himself inside of his house and then shot at cops. And it's not clear yet if the officers returned fire. Yeah.
Well, they did return fire.
Yeah.
The suspect is dead.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Seriously, it said, I wrote this off of a news article without thinking, and it says down here it's not clear if officers returned fire.
No, he did, because I heard that he used
a rifle.
The kids as like a shield.
Yeah.
During the standoff, and I guess there was like an easy shot and they got him.
Yep. Oh. Suspect is confirmed dead.
All right, well, that was a fail. I tried.
Next news story.
Next news story. Worms can someday help humans regrow body parts.
Get the bodies in the floor.
Researchers at the University of Washington's Friday Harbor Lab are studying a certain kind of worm in the hopes that humans can learn something from them. When they cut these worms in half, they will regrow their other half. They're hoping to be able to extract genes and cells to then help humans regrow their own limbs.
What kind of genes, though? Like boot cut?
Apple bottom jeans.
Boots with the fur.
Boots with the fur. With the fur. Jeans with the fur. Let's take it low. Shawty got low, low, low. That was
news.
They played that at my prom. I'm sorry. Okay. Finally, Santa's North Pole home is being sold on Zillow.
Okay.
What that?
It's like a house buying thing.
It's a house buying app.
How much? Does Mrs. Claus come with it?
I don't know,
she
but
hung?
It is 600.
She working that up to? She likes Skittles? She likes Mike and Ike's? What's her number?
She likes candy canes, if you know what I mean.
$656,957.
Yeah, I don't have that.
It was constructed by it was constructed in the 1800s out of old growth timber. It's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2,500 square foot toy lover's paradise, according to Zillow. And while it's not on the market just yet, that's the estimated value. It sits on 25 acres and features old world charm and modern day amenities thanks to a remodel in 2013. And it looks dope, man. There's a Christmas tree. There's a fireplace. There's a little sign outside that says this way to the toy store and this way to the stables.
It's cool. I'm just going to buy it, tear it down, and build condos.
Yeah.
I'm going to cry if that happens.
Are you going to pave the North Pole and put up a parking lot?
No. All right, tonight...
It's cool, I'm already dead inside.
Tonight, the Cowboys are playing the Vikings.
Woo!
And that's your sports.
Woo!
All right, I'm going to go straight into traffic and then go back to weather because we have a lot of blocking incidents.
I want to walk straight into traffic.
I, too, have a lot of blockage this morning.
Westbound State Road 520 is closed from December 2nd through the 4th. All lanes of westbound 520 between 92nd Avenue Northeast and Montlake Boulevard East State Road 513 will be closed overnight, Friday and Saturday, from 5 p.m. From 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. From 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. All right. On State Road 18, westbound, just east of Southeast 256th Street, there's a collision blocking the right lane. I-5 northbound on ramp West Seattle, there's another disabled vehicle partially blocking a lane. And on the
slow down and use your words.
On the I-5 southbound off-ramp to South Albro Place, there is a collision partially blocking the ramp on South Road 529 northbound and southbound at Snohomish River Bridge. All lanes will be closed today due to boat traffic. All right, for your weather, today there's a high of 50 and a low of 44 and a 40 to 60% chance of rain with PM showers. This is H. Quinn. I've given up on life. I'll try and be here tomorrow. Maybe not. Bye.
We'll be back after all-time low take cover, 89.9 KGRG. You're listening to The Buzz.
You're listening to KGRG 89.9 FM, today's rock. Now it's time to sit back, relax, and crack open a six-pack with The Buzz.
89.9 KGRG FM. That was Chick Magnet by MXPX. And this morning, for this six-pack, we're going to go over some, like, fun party themes and fun party games to go over, because I'm going to my first company holiday, like, Christmas party.
Yo.
Like, I'm not quite sure how to feel about it or, like, what I should do. All I know is there's going to be free food, so it's going to be fun. But, yeah, these are actually the top six awkward party games from the early 1900s.
Oh, I'm excited.
Party Fun, Wholesome Games from Around the World was a book compiled by Helen Stevens Fisher in 1938. Gives us some insight into the world of party games that were played in the 19th and early 20th centuries. So, these are really, these are weird. So you gotta think, like, no technology, they barely even had lights or something. I don't know. We should ask Mike later. Alright, so, number six on the 10 most awkward party games, Colonial Mitten.
Okay.
According to Fisher, the Mitten game was a favorite of George and Martha Washington when they invited people into their home. In fact, this American dinner party tradition continued well into the 1930s. As soon as the party guests arrived at the host's home, they were forced to wear thick mittens. Their fingers were jammed together in thick wool with only their opposable thumbs free. Then they were instructed to race one another by using their mittened hands to accomplish impossibly difficult tasks. They had to button baby clothes, pick up grains of rice from the floor, and more. The host was also encouraged to think of other ideas to make the guests struggle. During the dinner, guests had to eat while wearing the mittens. The game suggested that guests should be served the most difficult foods to eat without using their fingers. Whoever accomplished all their tasks with the best, or whoever accomplished all their tasks the best by the end of the night was the winner.
That was our present.
So, like, I can see, like, bringing really nice, thick gloves, but imagine, like, trying to eat soup. Or, like, trying to use chopsticks if those existed.
Yeah, just like, we're having sushi.
Hey! That would be terrible. Right, number five. Sweet Spelling.
Oh, I love me some spelling.
The party host prepared four cubes of sugar by writing letters of the alphabet in ink on the face of the cube. Then guests took turns throwing the four sugar cubes like dice, hoping that the letters facing up would form a word despite incredible odds. The book suggested that the host write a different letter of the alphabet on each side of the sugar cube, omitting the letters J, M, Q, V, X, and Z.
Why?
Try to spell a four-letter word with the letter Z.
Zoo with an exclamation point.
Did zoos exist?
I don't know.
Or like a four-letter word with Q, I don't know. But the members
Quail.
Of the... Fair. The members of the party continued to throw four sugar cubes into the kitchen table until someone spelled a word. Just like Scrabble, players would have a dictionary on hand in case there was a debate over whether or not a word actually existed. The winner got the inky, disintegrated cubes as a prize.
Ooh.
Right? I'm not sure I'd want that, though.
I don't want that.
And then we got number four. This one actually sounds like a lot of fun. Kitchen Sounds.
Okay.
So, when playing the Kitchen Sounds game, the party guests stood in the room next to the kitchen, but they were not allowed to see what was happening. A screen or blanket might even be hung on a clothesline to separate everyone except the host from the kitchen. Then, the host or hostess began to do something in the kitchen that made noise, mixing, shelling peanuts, sweeping the floor, chopping vegetables, etc. The members of the party had to listen closely while they guessed what those sounds were. The first person to shout the correct guess would win 1 point. Once the host heard the correct answer through the curtain, he or she moved on to the next action, continuing this way until they ran out of sounds to make in the kitchen. The party guest who guessed the most kitchen sounds correctly was the winner. This must have been a favorite in the 1930s because the author claimed that the game became very intense competition.
Okay.
So, what kind of sounds do you think you could make in a kitchen?
Oh, well, there are all sorts. Chopping vegetables, opening refrigerator doors. I mean, not back then, obviously, but...
This is actually a really fun game to play. Especially, like, because you'd have the microwave...
Garbage
you have, like,
disposal.
The fan that goes above the oven. I'm trying to think of some other stuff. Chopping vegetables is probably a really good one.
I know. Just kidding.
Eating a popsicle. Banging against
using
the door.
A can opener. opening cupboards.
Shucking corn.
Oh, shucking corn.
But those are numbers 6, 5, and 4 of the top 6 most awkward party games from the early 1900s. We'll be back with numbers 3, 2, and 1 after Beer by Real Big Fish on 89.9 KGRG FM. You'll listen to The Buzz.
And now, back to the 6-pack.
KGRG FM, KGRG FM, HD1 Auburn, also broadcasting on K207 AP, Seminary Lake Taps, 89.3 FM. You're listening to The Buzz. We're in the middle of our 6-pack. Our top 6 list of things are awesome, sometimes not so awesome. This morning's the top 10 awkward party games from the early 1900s. So if you're going to a Christmas party like I am, I'm not sure if you'd want to play these. A couple of them actually sound pretty fun, though. So,
yeah. Just
a quick recap. You have number 6, which is the Colonial Mitten game. You force your guests to, like, wear mittens and pick up grains of rice off the floor and eat really hard-to-eat foods with mittens. Just sort of torture your friends. It's great. Number 5 was Sweet Spelling, where you write letters on a sugar cube, or on 4 sugar cubes, and you roll the sugar cubes and hope you can spell a word.
That's, like, the one I don't want to play.
Yeah, And then you have number 4, which is Kitchen Sounds, where somebody stands in the kitchen, tries to make kitchen noises, and everybody has to stand in the room next to the kitchen. Guess what they're doing?
That one sounds fun.
I can see this be, like, in a fun group of adults being a lot of fun. It can be a lot of fun.
I'd play.
Right, though? Number 3 is getting a little dangerous here.
Ooh.
Right? The Swinging Shoe.
Okay. Okay. Tell me more.
Alright, so the Swinging Shoe. When playing the Swinging Shoe game, the party host found an old, unusable shoe, tied it to a rope, and stood in the backyard. Party guests were instructed to stand in a circle surrounding the host. Then the host began spinning the rope from the center of the circle with the shoe swinging around him or her. Keep in mind that most shoes in the early 20th century were made of heavy leather. To avoid being hit, the party guests had to jump as the swinging shoe came close to their feet.
I don't like this.
In this situation, it would be impossible for the party host to crouch low and keep the shoe off the ground. It was likely that the guests' ankles or calves would get taken out by a high-speed leather boot.
I don't like it.
It sounds terrifying, right?
I don't like it.
Like,
as you were telling this, I guess, because, like, they're doing construction, like, next door, and there's a really loud noise, and, like, I was like, the shoe's coming for me!
Shoe's gonna get ya. It kind of reminds me of there's that show Wipeout, where, like, they'd all stand on platforms and have to dodge
the why would you go on that show?
Be great! I want to do that show!
I would die.
Like, my dream is, like, or at least my, like, New Year's resolution for next year is I want to be on an American Ninja Warrior. I mean, it's awful at it, but I want to do it.
There's a guy that did the whole course naked, and then there's that other guy who did it in, like, a T-Rex costume.
I want to do cool stuff like that. All right, so
naked
number...
Naked or T-Rex?
Both.
Okay.
Number 2, having yourself a paper sack party.
The best kind of party is a paper sack party.
Upon arrival, party...
It's a paper sack party, don't stop. Sorry.
Upon arrival, party guests were given paper bags with holes cut out for eyes and a mouth. Each guest was instructed to put a bag over his or her head and tie a rope or ribbon around their neck so that the face was completely covered. All the guests had to wear a large number in front of their shirts. Each person was also given a piece of paper and a pencil. They then had to try to identify which one of their friends was under each paper bag. On their papers, they would write down the numbers and the names of the people they believed to go with those numbers. Whoever guessed the most identities correctly by the end of the party was the winner.
That could be fun.
Like, I'm not sure. You'd have to have a pretty large group of people, like, enough to where you'd be confused in who you were talking to. And I'm not sure if this would be fun if it was at a party where I didn't know most of the people. Like, yeah. You'd have to at least know the names.
Like, at the station, like, if everyone was here, I think it would be fun.
Right?
Yeah.
It'd be a ton of fun. Although, I think that, like, T2's beard would probably, like, poke out.
Just put a really long bag on his head.
The number one, my favorite, the hobo party.
Okay.
The concept of a hobo party was to have a cruel laugh at the misfortune of the homeless people.
Oh, of course.
On the party invitations, guests were instructed to show up in their oldest, dirtiest clothes. The next festivity started in the basement, which was decorated with the oldest, rustiest junk that the family could find. This was done to set the atmosphere. The game of hopping a freight car simulated the way the homeless men jumped in their trains as they tried to travel across the U.S. after the Great Depression. The party host set up a line of wooden crates stacked back-to-back to represent the train. While the guests were in their hobo attire, music was played. They had to walk around imaginary freight cars while the music stopped. Then they had to jump on top of the wooden crate before their friends did.
Is this where musical chairs comes from?
Kind of, except you had to jump on the crates and try not to fall off. Because if you fall off, you technically fell off a train and now you're dead.
Yay.
The fewer people who played the game, the fewer crates there were to jump on. Obviously, this is a more dangerous adult version of musical chairs. There you go. The second feature of the hobo party was a forced guess in engaging in an awkward adult version of trick-or-treat. They had to knock on the back doors of neighbors' houses and beg for sandwiches and beer while wearing their homeless attire.
I mean, I do that already.
Right? Of course, the neighbors were notified ahead of time, and the party guests were then forced to eat meals on the back stoop instead of the host's kitchen.
Oh.
I think I'd have a little bit of fun with this. Like, not to poke fun at homeless people because that's mean, but, like, dressing up like a homeless person, going around, like, having fun trying to play trick-or-treat for beer. That sounds great.
Let's do that.
And, like, having musical chairs instead, like, a little bit more dangerous? It'd be a ton of fun.
You know what game I really want to play?
What's up?
True American. I'll show you later.
Okay. But that was the top six awkward party games from the early 1900s. If you have a fun party game you'd like to play, maybe you've played one of these. Maybe you've had yourself a hobo party or, like, a paper sack party. Honestly, a paper sack party sounds something that would happen at, like, a swingers club.
Yeah.
Or, like, kitchen sounds, swinger edition.
Ooh.
Oh, man. So hit us up at TheBuzzKJRG or on Twitter at TheBuzzKJRG. Let us know what's your favorite holiday party game, or maybe you've played one of these. We'll be back after Snowcats by AFI. You're listening to The Buzz on 89.9 KJRG.
Good news, everyone. We've got a very special delivery today.
89.9 KJRG FM. You're listening to The Buzz, and we have some very special guests with us this morning. A couple of guys I met at the Jet City Comic Show. That's the last month now. I can't believe it's already been a month.
Yeah, but I'm still bummed that I couldn't go to that.
Right? You should be. It was great.
But dang hospital.
I have Brandon and Alex from Comics and Cognac joining us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good. It's early.
Yeah, right? And you guys are both local, right?
Yeah.
Okay, ish. Cool. Just for everybody listening, where are you guys from?
We are in Port Orchard.
Okay.
Oh.
This is a little bit of a drive, but not too bad.
I've been to the hospital there, too.
I'm sorry.
Nice.
Was it a fun
visit? The circuit, huh? All right.
Well, I went to, like, a school for bad kids over in Bremerton, and I got laryngitis, so they took me to Port Orchard.
Okay.
For bad kids, I like that. Yeah. That's the Renaissance school, right?
It was, like, a military school, but...
Oh.
Yeah.
So, you guys have a few different series of comics, and then you guys have the umbrella name Comics and Cognac. Are you guys actually Cognac fans, or...?
No, just not even a little bit. Comics and the cheapest beer we can find didn't have the same kind of ring, so
that's fair.
We thought we'd class it up a little bit.
It's hard to find, like, any sort of drink classier than cognac rather than, like, martini, but comics and martini just sort of sounds sad. I don't know.
Exactly.
But you guys have a few different comic series. You have Goody Good, Wing, and The Weekly Drivel. Let's start with Goody Good, because that one's a little morbid.
Well, yeah, a little.
A little.
Just a bit.
I like to call it the funniest tragedy you can read.
And
but morbid works.
Yeah. And, like, you have stuff like the one most current that you have on there is episode 36, where, like, it's all about just stuffing bodies and rugs and stuff, which it reminds me of, like, an episode of Archer where she's like, "I'll fetch a rug."
Oh yeah, right.
It was Hide the Hooker or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, why so morbid with this? Like, you guys just on a bunch of downers one day and figured slitting your wrist wasn't the way to go, or what?
Oh my gosh.
It just kind of came from the idea that. The old adage that no good deed goes unpunished. So it's, you know, you ever do something nice for someone and then it just blows up in your face?
All
Goody
the time?
Goody Good kind of switches that around, and as he's trying to do nice things for other people, it blows up in their face. sometimes literally.
So this is all one character then, continuously. It's not just a bunch of different... Well, there are a bunch of different characters involved, but at least there's one main character?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Goody Good is the main character, just out trying to do nice things for people. And it goes wrong. And as a direct result of his actions, people are killed and or maimed.
Now,
hilarity ensues.
Aw, you try so hard.
Art style-wise, you guys use stick figures and... It works. It's really, like, the stick figures really work, and then the coloring part of it, is that watercolor, or how did you do that?
That's actually Photoshop. I did it so it looked almost like a kid was coloring it, just because I thought the cuteness of potentially a kid coloring such a horrible comic would be a funny idea. It's gotten a little more detailed as the times come on, but I think simple tends to work for that story.
And how long have you guys been working on the Goody Good project?
You know, I think that we're probably about a year into that.
Okay.
Yeah, a year sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, okay. About a year.
And then the next thing you guys have on your website is a wing.
I love this one.
This one this tugged at the heartstrings a little bit. I started tearing up when I was reading it.
I was like, little bird.
He's fine. He's got a balloon. He's all good.
Right?
That was a personal venture of mine a while back, and I just did it over the course of a day. Just did it real quick. And that was that. I mean, you know, that's kind of the thing with Alex and I is we have so many different ideas that it's so impossible for us to field them all.
Yeah.
So sometimes we do those little ones and we throw out stuff like that just to have more product, I guess.
Well, and Wing's just drastically different from Goody Good.
Yeah.
Where Goody Good, again, is a little out there, a little morbid. And it's really fun. Wing is, it tugs at your heartstring, and the most powerful part about this is it's just the art. I love the writing in Goody Good, and I love the writing in Weekly Drivel. We'll get to that next, but the fact that the artwork really spoke for itself on this one, that was really cool.
You know, I think for the most part, that's what Alex and I tend to be gravitating toward. Most of our stuff is kind of hilarious, and to be honest, a lot of those things are direct products of drinking too much.
And just a general sadness.
Yeah, self-loathing, you know, things like that.
Dude, if I could draw half as well as you guys do, or at least even be half as creative as you guys do drinking, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Well... A lot of what happens on our meetup nights is too much drinking, and then we just, like, screw off the rest of the time. We'll get together for, like, 5 seconds and be like, all right, so what are we doing this week? Great, break, let's get drunk.
Corey, they have those like, classes where you just, like, drink a bunch of wine and you just paint. We should go.
It's kind of like that.
We should do that.
Yeah. End up being the nude model instead of drawing the nude model?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Right. But you know, we do actually, we have a bigger comic coming up that's quite a bit more serious. We may have to lay off the drinking for a while to get that one done. I know, that's quitter talk. I get it, but...
It is quitter talk.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys want to talk about that project real quick?
Yeah.
Or
is it a secret? Just kidding.
It's not really a secret. It's just, I guess it's such a broad idea. I'm gonna let Alex field this one.
Okay.
Oh, thanks. Oh, cool. I told you I was gonna throw you under the bus. Okay, so it's a spin on the classic superhero comic, where instead of a superhero in a world of normal people, it's a normal guy in a world of superheroes. And it's all about the idea of what makes one super. What makes a person somehow inherently good and inherently better, and the idea of what one person thinks of as just nothing, as most of us think the things we do are just part of us. But to someone else, we could be their superhero.
That's a really cool idea, and this one's going to be a little bit more episodic compared to the web stuff where it's just like short clips, right?
Right. We're just planning one. I think it's at 160 pages or so. We're just planning one graphic novel, one shot.
Yeah, it's actually already written. We're in the editing phase at this point. And I personally, I'm starting some sketches on it and stuff like that. So it's a little ways down the road. But in the meantime, between finishing up Goody Good, which we've got slated to about 100 strips, we've got some other little shorts. And that'll be kind of the segue into the bigger thing.
Well, you guys also have the Daily Drivel on your website, which looked to be a little bit more personal and introspective, where it looks like at one point you guys actually drew yourselves into it. And it's more like newspaper style, or it reminds me a lot of like something I'd see in a newspaper.
Well, that was really what the idea was, is we basically would take real news stories and we would just put our own spin on them. So they're real stories. We would just make them us, I guess.
Take funny or weird headlines and just read a quick overview of whatever the news story was and make some kind of joke. And there's a lot of jokes in the news. The news is a good place for comedy mining.
Right? I mean, sometimes you look, they're really depressing stuff, but even then within the depressing stuff, it's kind of funny. Like, you hear about bank robberies and stuff, and 90% of the time it's in Florida, but...
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, Florida is where it's at for just insane people.
So, what got you guys into... Like, how did you guys meet up? What started this project? Or at least the overall project of Comics and Cognac. Did you guys meet on Craigslist? Did you bump into each other on the street?
It was a casual encounters post.
Gotcha.
No, we met in our early 20s. I just happened to get a job at a record store where Brandon was already working, and we became friends. And like that's pretty much the whole deal. The way we got into the comic thing is just talking about it. Brandon always comes up with these huge sweeping ideas, the broad strokes of a story, and I'm more oriented on
the details,
smaller, granular like details of the story. So we kind of fit together where he'll come up with a broad idea, and I just kind of stitch scenes together, and it just works, I guess.
Did you guys like take any formal art classes beforehand, or is this just all freehand stuff you do for fun? Or like, did you take a formal creative writing class at college or something?
No, I went to art school for 2 years, so I got half a degree. That's what I tell my mom anyway, because she hates the fact that I left school. But I left school because I got a chance to be an apprentice tattooer. So
that's
I've
really
actually
cool.
been a tattooer for 12 years.
Nice.
So that's my bread and butter, but comics have always been a passion. So, I've always had a foundation in art of some kind. So,
what's been the toughest part of putting this project together for you guys?
Man, it's just it's hard to create anything from inside yourself and be able to look at it and say, is this good? Like, do people care? Are we able to push the story out there so people understand what we're trying to get at? Because in amongst a lot of our messed up stories, our funny stuff or gruesome stuff, there's still a tiny nugget of like real life, real feelings to that thing. Even Goody Good, I mean, it might be hard to get beyond the blood splatters and brains, but
that's my favorite part.
There is a real thing in there, nihilistic as it might be.
What sort of challenges have you guys faced publishing this stuff? Or at least trying to get it into print. Like,
none. Our publisher is great.
Okay, that's awesome.
We publish our own stuff. We buy every book we sell is handmade by us.
Yeah,
so we have no problems with our publishers. Yeah. It's a great deal we got worked out.
So you hand make this, and that's crazy.
Yeah, we at this point it's best just to produce the stuff. We kind of feel like making the stuff and getting it out there is kind of at the forefront of what we should be doing. I mean, we could easily send the stuff out and, you know, hope to get picked up by a bigger company. But right now, it's just about kind of feeling ourselves out, you know. And every product or every project we work on tends to be on another level than the one before, which, I mean, I guess that's what being creative is about, right? But we'll get there. I think eventually we'll start sending packets out to bigger publishing companies and see where that goes.
What sort of things have you guys done to try to push yourselves out there and get yourself more exposure? Because I know for a lot of bands, it's the same issue. You make music, but then how do you get it to people?
Well, you know, I think like a lot of other people, it's just putting it online for free. You know, that's the big one. It's hard driving traffic to your site because you are in a sea of literally millions and millions of other fantastic webcomics. So it is hard to get the stuff out there. So our only other outlet is shows. So we do shows, mostly local stuff. We haven't gone beyond Washington yet, but we're working on it. I mean, to be honest, comic shows aren't necessarily very money-making. It's more about getting our name out there.
Okay. Now, did either of your parents keep your old drawings on like the fridge or anything?
You know, I'll be honest, some. For me, there was always something messed up about what I drew. So I would draw these scenes like so as a kid I would draw these pretty scenes, you know, it was a smiley sun and like a nice background with mountains, and then there would be a boat in the water on fire, and the guy in the boat would be on fire. Nice. And my mom was always like, "What is wrong with you? Why can't you just make something normal?" So rarely those would make it to the fridge.
If you guys had to peg down like one inspirational piece or one inspirational like artist or person who really pushed you to start doing this, who would that be, or what would that be? Like, was there a comic that stood out to you guys, or a comic book artist, or maybe even like a band, or just you stared at a tree for a while?
The tree, yeah, that's up there in the top inspirations. For me personally, I mean, I've really been reading comics forever, so I've got so many different inspirations. You know, the comics that you see on our website is so not even close to how I traditionally draw. So I guess a lot of those comics are directly inspired by something. I would say Goody Good. Art-wise, I guess you could maybe say Cyanide and Happiness,
okay.
Which, you know, I mean, Simple just works for certain stories. Wing is a little more like storybook, you know, and that's kind of what I thought when I was making it. And then, you know, Drivel is a little more newspapery kind of a style, I guess you could say. So
is that a style? Newspapery?
Newspapery is a style.
Oh,
just invented
style.
That this morning. Patent pending. Yeah. So true inspirations, the list would be vast for me personally.
So since you guys sound like you're professional drinkers, what's your drink of choice?
It's gotta be Rainier, man.
Yeah?
Rainier.
Yeah,
a couple of beer dudes.
Yeah.
Although, well, yeah, you gotta go local too, right?
As well. What's up?
So you gotta go local too, right? With the Rainier.
It is local. It is now made in California, which is really sad, but we ignore that. I think they're bringing it back here, but it was made in California for a while.
They still have the giant lit up red R on once you head into Seattle.
They do.
I thought they took it down for a while. It was at the Mohai Museum in Seattle, but I think they put it back up on that building.
And
if
then,
I remember correct.
Yeah. One last question that we always like to ask our guests.
Oh, good.
Are you guys ready?
No.
All right, brace yourselves.
Go ahead, shoot.
How do you like preparing your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches?
Oh. Ooh. Huh. That's a really good... Okay, here's what I do, all right? And I'm just going to... This is a free service, what I'm about to tell you guys. You take one slice of bread, and you put jelly on it. Then you take a second slice of bread, you put jelly on that also. A third slice of bread, peanut butter, and put it face down on top of one of those jellies. And then on top of the bare spot you got on top now, put some peanut butter on there. Put your remaining jelly on that. It's like having two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with only three pieces of bread. Boom. Game changer.
Holy cow. Wow.
Okay. Just blow your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can't follow that up very well. But I learned from my grandfather to put the peanut butter down first and then just put the jelly over top of the peanut butter, which is actually quite ridiculous because then it's like you just end up making a massive mess and you don't get equal distribution of jelly.
But if you do peanut butter first, don't you get peanut butter in your jelly?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Jelly's much easier to wipe off.
Let's just ignore what I said and we'll go with Alex's Big Mac peanut butter and jelly sandwich thing.
That's what it is, the Big Mac of PB&J.
Oh my god, like it sounds a little intense, but I'm willing to try it now. I'm excited. It also sounds like a little less effort, like you don't have to make two separate sandwiches.
No, you get two sandwiches with three pieces of bread. It's a mathematical anomaly.
Well guys, thanks for calling in this morning and joining us.
Sure, thank you.
Have a good one.
Yeah, where can people find you guys on? You guys have a Twitter, a Facebook, phone number? Yeah. People call you at? I don't know.
We got comicsandcognac.com. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter at comicsandcognac. We're on Patreon. We're all over the internet.
Even if people visit your website, I noticed you guys give out free bumper stickers.
Nice.
We do,
and we have them. We're running low.
Oh. Yeah.
So, hurry up and rush fast to their website. It's comicsandcognac.com. We'll have that up on our Facebook and our Twitter as well. This has been Brandon and Alex. Guys, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Have a good morning, guys.
Yeah. Yep.
So make sure you go check out their stuff. Support some local artists because that's what we do on The Buzz. We like talking to local people. But we'll be back after Dropkick Murphy's Warrior's Code on 89.9 KGRG. Betrayed by the Game, Dance Gavin Dance on 89.9 KGRG FM. Who's Gavin?
I don't know, but he likes to dance.
Right? And it sounds like somebody's giving the buzzsaw next door. Is that the name of this week's today's episode? No, screw it. Entire week's episode is just the buzzsaw now. I gotta go edit KGRG.com in our on-demand section, where ironically enough, you can catch our interview with Brandon and Alex from Comics and Cognac, because that was fun hanging out with those guys and talking to them this morning.
They're cool.
Right?
They're cool. They're cool.
Support some local artists. They're local. They're from Port Orchard. They're really awesome dudes, and they know how to make one hell of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. If you missed that particular part, like, that blew my mind. If you missed that part, go and listen right now. Like, it's going to be up later, but screw it. Go into the future. And anyways, I'm getting off track. It's 8:52 and the saw's getting annoying, so we gotta get out of here. You ready, Danica?
Yes.
We're gonna sing this like Garth Brooks, cause screw Garth Brooks. Either Garth Brooks or Fred Durst. Choose one.
I don't even know what's happening.
So long. That's my best Garth Brooks impression. I'm
sorry.
I
can't even do it, I'm laughing so hard. Wow, I can't do it.
Elevators and goodbye.
You sound like Barney.
Goodbye.
Oh my god. I wanna die.
But if you missed any part of this episode or any of our past episodes, hit us up on KGRG.com or the official KGRG FM app. Thanks again to Alex and Brandon for joining us this morning, and thanks for TJ for calling in and winning those ghoul tickets. He's had a lot of fun in that show with like Decimator and Fermentor and Jeff the drummer.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those dudes could probably use like a hug or something or like a pat from their mom. But until tomorrow morning, bright and early, 6 a.m. on 89.9 KGRG FM, you've been listening to The Buzz. We gotta leave it. But some My Chemical Romance, because why the heck not, right?
Yes.
Feeling a little emo this morning.
Yes.
Check out our Facebook and our Twitter. We post up the best mashup
ever. The best
ever.
Thing I've ever witnessed.
Like, I in hate my life. Christmas music, but now I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Mariah Carey. You're the real MVP.
Yep.
All right, we out.